Welcome to the Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology in this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of the Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews entertaining and informative guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to those wondering where all this is taking us. And now your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Do you ever find yourself exhilarated and exhausted by turns, or maybe delving into seemingly unrelated areas of interest? Those are signs of your creative mind at work, and you may be surprised to learn of the benefits of your unorthodox approach to learning and career. Today, you will be hearing from a Hall of Fame member, the International Adult and Continuing Education Hall of Fame, located at the University of Oklahoma, inducted Professor Kathy King in 2011, Professor of Adult and Higher Education at the University of Central Florida in Orlando. Kathy is an award-winning author who has published a few books, 30 or so. Recent ones include Empowering Women Through Literacy and The Professor's Guide to Taming Technology. And she's also done podcasting for teachers. So we have a veteran podcaster with us today. Other focus is on workplace training and online learning. She is known for her conference sessions and innovative topics and is a popular international keynote and conference speaker, mentor, and professor. Her areas of research include instructional technology, faculty development, and mentoring. I met Professor King at the Text and Academic Authors Association conference recently, and while listening to her presentation there, I realized it was filled with ideas of value to you, regardless of your occupation. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Professor King.
Thank you very much.
You know, what seemed to me to be the core of your presentation was developing tools to help us meet our goals, whatever they might be. But in terms of setting those goals, you emphasize the need to be who you are as a result of your whole life experience. Can you explain why that is so important, especially now?
Well, it is really important, Jane, because long time ago, you know, our parents, our grandparents, maybe they prepared for a vocation based on apprenticeship or academic training, etc. And they stayed in that career for one period of time for their whole life. You know, you'd get the gold watch at 40 or 50 years, you know, sort of thing when you retired. And that's just not going to happen in the 21st century anymore. Our students that are starting college are going to graduate and possibly be employed in careers that have not even been invented when they started school 4 years prior. So building on who we are and all our individual differences, we have different life histories, we have different upbringings, we're from different parts of the world, different parts of the nation we grow up in. Each difference makes us unique and makes us uniquely qualified if we draw on those differences to address the multiplicity of needs in our global society and our rapidly changing world. A big part of what we have to do in our work in the 21st century is solve problems, come up with creative solutions, and our uniqueness, our differences, afford us the capability of approaching problems, development, etc., from different perspectives, and that makes us invaluable. Recognizing where we come from, what we have to contribute, how our backgrounds and how our training and our life experiences form who we are, can help us understand what we have to contribute.
Well, I hope that hiring committees have that same point of view, because it sounds like, you know, so many times you hear a person in their 40s or 50s say, oh, you know, when they're job hunting, that this is, you know, an uphill battle to say the least. But this is an encouragement, I think, on that, if you can highlight the value of your life experience somehow. Do you have any ideas on how people can do that?
very much. I'm also a career coach, faculty coach, academic coach. I work with a lot of people who are in academia, and part of what the work I do with them is help them develop their resume, their academic resume. We call it a CV, and help them to think about how to pose their experience and understand it and convey it effectively. So this very issue. But I also talk to people in all sorts of other types of jobs. So you have to think about and focus on flexibility. Where do you want to be? What opportunities are you approaching? I mean, when I looked for positions when I talk to people that are, I say, when you apply for every position, you should have a different version of your resume. You need to, for every position you apply to, based on what they're looking for, bring to the surface, bring to the top of your resume those skills and attributes, those talents that are going to address the criteria they're looking for. So you're going to have a different one for the slightly different organizations, the slightly different roles, the expectations that each advertisement has, each job description, and particularly address that. And be prepared when you go for those interviews to talk about how your prior experience, your expertise, your insight can uniquely contribute to that organization. Oh, and one of the big things, Jane, mm-hmm. I'm sure you know this, but it seems like a lot of people don't. You need to research the organization you're going to interview with. That is a home run with everybody that you go visit. Get online, research the organization, and be able to slide in very deftly into your interview about how you want to work at it because of X, Y, and Z that you read about the organization,
mm-hmm.
and how you can contribute to their mission and their goals.
Well, as in most things, it seems like everybody would be doing that, but really, you're probably in the minority if you do that, and therefore come to
the
top.
I hear that over and again. I can think of three people right off in the last 3 years that had come to me for career advice, and they're not in academia. They're in all sorts of other things, mm-hmm. like retail and all sorts of other things. And I've coached them to remember, look online, you know, just what we talked about. And they said the interviewers were so shocked. They said nobody else had done that in all three cases.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
flabbergasted.
Yeah.
I had no idea that people weren't doing this.
Well, you know, it's hard to get rid of that notion that ideally one finds her niche early, sticks with it, and becomes
yes.
a recognized expert, if not a guru in the field. But I noticed from your CV that your bachelor's degree from Brown University was in biochemistry. And then you followed it up with a master's in theology and missions, a master's in adult education, and continuing on that, a doctorate in higher education from Widener University. So you have a number of strands in your own life journey, just looking at your education. Can you give us some examples of how those earlier interests have been useful, maybe even essential, to later career opportunities when they arose?
Absolutely. And it's a matter of being cognizant, you know, aware, self-aware of how the different journeys, the experiences you've had contribute to where you are now and the opportunities that you're walking into, you know? So you kind of have to do that self-assessment ahead of time and mm-hmm. think about it in order to convey that to other people. But for like myself, let's take, for example, this summer I was teaching a summer class about particular adult learning theory. Well, I could talk to my students who work in a variety of settings, are not just professors, but work in different areas, right, of adult learning and higher uh-huh. education. I could pull on experiences from those different careers. I could talk about teaching technical content because of that biochemistry. I could talk about working in community education because of the ministry background that I have. I could talk about working in higher education as well. But I have to think ahead of time about which examples to pull and how they're connected. If you just run through life and don't reflect and don't think back and self-assess, you're not going to make those connections, you know, just on the fly, as it were.
That is, I can see where you would be real helpful in your coaching to be able to spot those things that maybe the person themselves kind of missed. But there, that sounds also that it really ties in with researching the hiring organization, because then you know what to look for in your own background and connect
exactly.
the two.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the advantages. You can say the older we get, we have more experiences to pull from. So we have, you know, a larger toolbox than the younger person who's walking in. They don't have as large a breadth of experience to say, oh, yeah, I remember when I did this. That's going to be helpful in addressing these issues in your organization. Or, yes, well, I didn't work exactly on that. But let me tell you about how I use those same skills in this setting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be active doing that. We have to be prepared. We have to get comfortable expressing our value and how we're effective, because you're right. Our society values youth. 40s, 50s, 60s, we have to be active, preparing for our interviews and communicating our value in explicit ways with examples and with confidence.
So you and many of us have right now a lot of different balls in the air, so to speak. I mean, we've been talking about a linear in the past. I did this, then I did this, and then I did that. But you have a lot of things going on, strands of your life, you might say. What are some of the tricks and tools you use to keep them, these balls you're juggling, from falling to the floor and rolling off into oblivion?
Oh, that's a great image, isn't it? Some of the tricks that I use technology is one big one. I use, try to find apps. I would suggest to your listeners that they try to find, browse through apps like the to-do apps, you know, the tracking apps, the calendars. Which ones do they feel most comfortable with? I love Google Calendar because I can customize it. It's virtual. Any computer I get on, my iPad, my phone, no matter where I am, I can pull it up and see where I am. And no matter what time zone I'm in, it adjusts as well. But I can modify it, enter my appointments, and see them as well. I can track my time. As an author, you know, it's not easy to write. It takes a lot of time because you write and then you rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. Well, I actually schedule time for my preparation. I actually make appointments with myself. Sounds a little bizarre, but I actually have to schedule that like any other kind of work. And so I actually put in appointments in my schedule for the tasks that I have to get done, for the work that I have to get done. And so looking at my day, I break it up into four major slots: the morning, the early afternoon, the late afternoon, and the early evening. And what things are non-negotiable, what things are going to be in certain spots, like standing meetings that happen every week or every month. And then what blocks do I have available to put in the things that I need to do and want to do and work around there. I also keep charts that track my different projects.
I'd like to go into that in the second half of our interview. Let's talk about those charts, because that is really helpful. So we'll take that up in the upcoming segment of the Social Network Show. This is Dr. J, and we're talking with Dr. Kathy King of the University of Central Florida.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome to the Social Network Show again. And we are talking with Dr. Kathleen King from the University of Central Florida. And Kathy, you just mentioned charts. And that fascinates me. I love to see things that I can see everything at once. You know, it really helps me see where I am in the stream of time. So what do you use for that?
Well, what I use, actually, Jane, is I use Excel. I find that it's pretty universally available. You can get a spreadsheet program either through Google Docs or one of the other free apps if you don't have access to Office. And if you lay out Excel, your spreadsheet program, so that in the rows going down the left-hand side of your spreadsheet, your worksheet, you mm-hmm. have your repetitive tasks. So it might be something, I'm going to use generic terms because I don't know what your audience okay. is particularly working in. You might have pre-planning, planning, then the operation itself, and then follow-up. You break down your major tasks that you do for most of your projects. That's going to be mm-hmm. your skeleton, and you can copy and paste it over and over going down the page for each of your projects. Then across the top, each of your columns can be the months of a year, right?
Okay.
So you just
yeah.
label those across. Well, what you can do is say, label the first project, Project A, you know, maybe working on the hospital. And you say, pre-planning. Well, we're doing that in January and February. So you put X's in those boxes. And then you say, well, pre-planning is those months. Then planning are going to be the next 2 months. You mark those, et cetera, et cetera. You work your way down the page. And it lets you see visually and also document the anticipated timeline for the entire project and mm-hmm. how long, based on your experience, based on the needs, on deadlines you have, where you have to do certain things, and when they're going to happen. Now, this is where we get into the balls bouncing around in the air that you're trying to keep track of, right? Where so many mm-hmm. of us have multiple things in the air that we're trying to juggle. Well, now, the next set down, you're going to list your next project, and you go through the same process. Most of us find in our work that we can probably carry 2 or 3 projects if we coordinate them such that the intense work of one is being done at the same time that the less intense work of another is.
Okay.
There's different phases of the work that we do. So mm-hmm. if you visually can use this aid to help you lay out your projects, you can see, oh, I can do the pre-planning for this project while I'm also having myself and my team do the operations of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be, you know, a big conflict of our effort to be able to do there. There's a little bit of downtime when we're at this phase, so we can do this part of it, et cetera, et cetera. And when you lay them out like that, you can also see, hey, we can't be in operations for all 3 projects at the same time. That's going to be insanity.
So
then you
right.
adjust. You adjust your projects and the flow so that they spread over your calendar.
Yeah, you have a pipeline, different projects going through. And what's nice about that idea is that you're finishing up projects in a staggered manner over time.
Exactly.
So
yes.
you don't end up with a point in which everything's done and you're sitting there, oh, well, now what? Do I start another 3 projects all at the same time? Not good.
And so that's where the pre-planning might be. You might be out doing estimates on jobs, or you might be writing grant proposals, or whatever the nature of your mm-hmm. work is. You have to keep doing that constantly to bring in the next project. You know, and so
right.
this allows you to incorporate that work cycle. People with different types of work will use this in different ways. Another thing that we talked about that day that we met Jane was, if you're working with a team, or you have collaborators, or you have collaborators at a distance or nearby, documenting it and having a point of reference to discuss it up front. This is what we're planning to do. Does this work for you? Do you have the resources? Do you have the time? Do you have conflicts in your schedule? Do we need to readjust things? That can all be discussed up front. And then we get to my other favorite little line that I make a joke about, but I'm very serious. We're masters of our own universe. So mm-hmm. if we need to readjust those schedules, we talk to our collaborators, if more than just ourselves are involved, and say, you know, something came up, or the project's going longer, or they gave us an extension, or whatever it is, and you come to an agreement about changing the length of the process or the deadlines, etc. Mm-hmm. If it just has to do with our own work and there's nobody else involved and the pressure is too heavy, or there are other great opportunities that are urgent, you say, hey, I'm master of my own universe. I can change my Gantt chart and move this phase out to another date. It's
right.
The great part. It's not written in stone. It's there as an aid. It doesn't cause anxiety. It gives relief. And that's an important thing to think about it.
Sure is. Well, you know, sort of running through this, too, is that different people have their own way of working. And you used the word process to describe a concept central to your philosophy of achievement, if I can call it that. What do you mean when you refer to your process?
I mean quite a few different things by that. But
okay.
Process to me is about talking about that you have different steps that you follow through. And for me, the biggest success strategy is when you look at a project that you're doing, think of it not as the big major project. Like, I work with a lot of students doing their PhD dissertations, mm-hmm. and they freak out at the thought, even when they're applying to the program. I say, you know what? It happens phase one, phase two, phase three, and four, five, and six if we need it, you know?
Uh-huh.
It breaks down into all the pieces, and then it's manageable. You break down
okay.
whatever you have to attack into the pieces that are manageable for you. And that's a really important part of it in making any project that you have to do, any goal, any achievement, into the small pieces. Those 30 books that I've published, they didn't happen by sitting down and writing a whole book in a day. They wrote by writing, you know, word by word, page by page,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's how you write books. That's a huge thing that a lot of people evidently can't even imagine doing that and writing a book. But it's the same thing as writing a paper. It's just a lot of papers organized mm-hmm. in a very meaningful way.
Oh, right. And people go from being a student to either their occupation, or maybe they go back into academia as an instructor and a professor, and suddenly writing seems so much harder. And I remember one person telling me, well, you're used to writing. You wrote all these papers. An article really is no different. It's a paper. So people often have experience doing what they want to do in the future, just need to recognize that that's what it was. Well, I have one last question, and that is, how do you avoid becoming overwhelmed? Is what you were just saying about doing things in pieces, is that the key?
That's a big part of it, breaking it down into pieces, focusing on the fact that, you know what, it's a long process, and right now I'm doing this piece of it. I don't need to worry about all the other pieces. I will get to them eventually. The other is trying to juggle your life and realize that we have a life balance. And that, you know, I just recently made a decision. I moved to the outskirts of Orlando. I'm going to be teaching at University of Central Florida beginning in a few weeks. And part of that decision was to relocate to a more rural area. I'm in a rural community because I wanted to be where I could be closer to nature, work in the yard, trim trees, etc. I center mm-hmm. in those environments. And that's really important for me because I need to get to where I can settle my mind and connect entirely the mind, body, soul, spirit, whatever you want to call it. We're not just brains and we're not just physical beings either. We're this integrated whole, and you need a balance of your whole person in order to be successful in your life, your career, your relationships. It's not easy balancing like that. And unfortunately, our careers are not interested in that balance. They're only interested in one part of us. we have to be proactive in protecting our wellness and the balance in our lives. We have to use the skills that we can develop, like we've been talking about, Jane, to take control and control the workflow, the stress, the demands that are upon us, so that we don't feel stressed out and overwhelmed, and also cultivate the other parts of who we are as human beings. It's an exciting journey. It's an exciting adventure to be alive, and we don't want to get lost in the craziness and stress of the 21st century.
Well, those are beautiful thoughts on which to end. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. King of the University of Central Florida, and appreciate your taking the time. I know you're busy because of moving and just moving in, so thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. It's great to be back on a podcast.
And thanks to you also, our listeners, and most important guest, for keeping us company on The Social Network Show. Do visit our website at thesocialnetworkstation.com, and you'll find us on iTunes and Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, various sites. So you can also follow us on Twitter at @SocialNetShow. Until we get together here again, I hope you'll have fun and be safe online and off.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.